Great. So this is for this afternoon, I guess. After last night's drink, I guess you will find today's lecture everything perfect and right. Yeah, if you got enough drink. Anyway, so let me remind you the last thing I talked about in last lecture. So I look at the simplified ferromagnetic equations. And so this is a planar ferromagnet. So this is the dynamical equation I looked at. So it's okay. This is typical initial data. So this is again is in particle plus field regime. And I'm interested in how these marons or half bubbles, magnetic half bubbles dynamics. Okay? And Sophia told me actually there's a work for static case also done earlier by Sandy and somebody else. Yeah. So this is the dynamical law obtained. Very much like Ginzburg-Landau-Schrödinger equation, even the proof is very similar, a little bit technical difference. So I'm not going to talk about that. Lot of detailed analysis, of course, for all these problems. So now let me continue, okay? Refresh your memory. Now let's continue. So I'm going to talk about traveling wave solution, first of all, for planar ferromagnets. So first, let me recall you the essential feature of a vortex dynamic in classical fluid. First of all, if we have one single vortices, either plus or minus one topological degree, it will simultaneously pin in the fluid, and it won't move unless the fluid itself is moved, just move along the fluid. There's no other mode or dynamics. But the reason is very simple, because we already know there are several conservation laws. Total vorticity, of course, will never change in this situation, but this won't give you anything, but because the linear momentum is also preserved. So the center of mass will move, the bubble location will move. So that is first clear. Multi-vortices, very much like interacting electro charges in uniform magnet field, this so-called quantum Hall effect. Okay, this is classical fluid, vortices in classical fluid. And it's true, actually, now we proved for Ginzburg and Schrodinger and planar ferromagnetism, very much like that effect as well. Now, in classical fluid, there's a famous example of traveling wave. Because uncertainty principle, it's usually you're adding so-called Lamar oscillations. But for our purpose, probably we shouldn't add in that. So you have initial position, plus minus vortices, and if they go in this direction, then they simply go in the direction orthogonal connecting these two vortices, parallel motion, just like that. Okay? So the question is there a traveling wave solution, say, from planar ferromagnets or marons? Yeah? Now, in this setup, in the equation, the speed of light is normalized already to be unit. So speed of this marron should be much smaller than speed of light. Otherwise, right, it's another question, more in relativity. And where you will develop shock waves. Some of the derivation, I forget to mention in earlier lectures by I.M. Siegel at Toronto, but he did consider what happens when these two vortices are very close, and then they will be in regime, like comparable with speed of light, and they develop shock waves, stuff like that. But this is another KPP equation, so on, asymptotically comes out. Another story I won't talk about here, and probably it's not something good for me to do it, because there will be more other experts more suitable to do such problem. So here, epsilon supposedly to be much smaller than 1. It's reasonable. So If you're doing that, you plug in such solution, you find it reduces to elliptic problem, Schrodinger map type equation. And this, even though contain first order, the equation still somehow self-adjoint. Okay, this is a system, but still in sense that you have a nice variation integral and self-adjoint. Now, after scaling, after you take off space scaling, the equation becomes that. Right? So this is the elliptic problem. We want to show if there is an entire solution in whole space. So the original, if you consider the speed fixed, the original distance between two melons in original scale should be 1 over epsilon, because you scale down by epsilon, 1 over epsilon become unit distance, right? So that means the vortices move rather slowly, right, at the very far distance. So you're scaling down and become that. Now, here is mapped to S2, so you use a spherical coordinate and use a spherical projection. You can change into complex notation. And then you become a purely a nonlinear Schrodinger equation, very complicated, and you have asymptotic behavior, and you have a corresponding variational integral. And then you're asking for whether or not you can find a global solution. Now, this problem, of course, for Ginzburg-Landau Schrodinger situation, that was started by Bethel and Salt. Except that now you have a more complex first order derivatives and more nonlinearity coming in to this problem. So I have two choices. If I ask my students, say, well, okay, read this paper and carry out all the similar analysis, which is not necessarily easy to do. It's a 100 pages paper. So, but on the other hand, it's better to find a new way of doing that. So let's assume for the original configuration, vortex at 2 points on the axis, right? Plus A and minus A on y-axis. And asymptotically, suppose you do have two vortices at the V2 locations. Now the coherent length or cross size of these melons will be epsilon size. So you asymptotically do energy expansion, you find this form of asymptotic energy expansion. Okay? Now, the reason why the 12 sort can find the solution is because this asymptotic energy calculation, which you see versus vortex surface energy, versus vortex configuration energy, this is the first order term which gives you exactly this quantity. And so your expansion right down explicitly in this situation, you find this energy law. And you will find there exists one sort of unique distance between the 2 points which reach a critical point. Okay? So, in sense, the anomalous energy has one critical point. But if you calculate that critical point, it clearly is not minimum. It's actually local maximum. And you have to use minimax method to hit this point. Okay? But the detailed analysis for Ginzburg-Landau Schrodinger, as I said, in the work of Bethel and Salt. So, how to do this problem now? Yeah? And now you have more things to learn about. So I started cheating, yeah? Because that is not the way I like to do anyway. So now let's go back. Okay, so first of all, what are we going to do? So there's a way to obtain all sort of minimax critical point of certain variational problems through gradient flows. Now, that if you notice that in all these Ginzburg-Landau equations, which I used this method, use heat flow to hit actually all non-degenerate critical point of anomalous energy. Of course, you cannot follow by one initial data. You usually follow by a disk, okay? And so there's a lot of construction, you will see. But of course, it's nothing surprise if you use variational method, let me know which is classical idea, you sort of quasi-gradient deformation, which is very close to such argument. But actually, you do can hit by heat equation method. And for harmonic map, which is related close to related to this problem now, because elliptic problem corresponding will be more harmonic map type. And for harmonic map, there's a work by Ding and myself, which published in some weird journal in China 1989, called A Generalization of Yale Simpson theorem. Turns out to be a nice theorem afterward, people realize, but we just get it right off there, nobody knows for many years. Eventually realize it's actually a good theorem. But nevertheless, you can use this method. But it will be useful in the argument below. Now for heat flow, there will have finite time blow up, and there will have infinite time blow up. The finite time blow up example, of course, it was due to Casey Chang, Ding, and Ye, Lu Gangyi. Yeah, the first example, as far as I know. But for infinite time, which was known long ago, which is very easy to do. For example, Hamilton knows it a long, long time ago. Okay? Won't blow up in finite time. You, for example, you exactly cover sphere once. And so on the disk, boundary data will be constant. You let it flow, it won't blow up in any time. By the infinity, you cannot find a harmonic map with boundary data constant. It means it has to blow up. Yeah, this is the case. You won't have a finite time blow up, but blow up exactly at infinity. Now, there is so-called bubbling and the neck problem in all these analysis. Yeah, and bubbling corresponds to so-called energy identity. So, in sense that the heat flow at a certain time you blow up, you have energy before that time, you take the weak limit of this all the energy. And then you look at the weak limit of map, calculate the energy. The difference is always low semi-continuous. The difference happens to give by a bunch of bubbles you blow up. And this is called energy identity, exact equality. And in harmonic map case, I think it was first done by Yost. The proof is so complicated, I think even himself cannot recall how proof goes, yeah, these days. And Parker gave much better proof. Yeah, part of Sachs-Uhlenbeck idea is used in Park sitting. And then for S2 target, Qingjie find the proof. And at the infinite time blow up, Ding and Tian proved what happens with energy identity. And they basically consider with tensor field in L2. Now this result was optimal for at least 5 years or so, until a couple of years ago, but Wang Chanyu and I proved something better. I will explain why just in a moment. But in finite time, that result was done by myself at Wang. The next zero in this problem is harder than bubbling. Okay, it's harder than bubbling, but not in all the problems. In Ginzburg Lano, it's the other way along. Yeah, but for this problem, it's harder. Next zero, exactly I said, the L infinity oscillation will go to zero in neck region. So Park for harmonic map, Ding and Tian for L2 tensor, uniform bound in L2, Fi. Now why L2? If you look at the proof, you will find it follow, there's no way you can improve it. You know, I looked at it, I was flipping for the paper, so I thought about it for quite a while, actually. It was very nicely written. It's essentially optimal by the method use Hopf differential, and that's best you can do. But from analysis, I say it's bad. Why? Let's just do dimension analysis. Tensor field, say like Laplacian. In 2D, Laplacian is minus 2 degree. So if you assume Laplacian in L2 means you have minus 2 dimensional quantity is bounded. And energy identity is zero dimensional. So you have assumption on minus two dimensional quantity, got a conclusion in zero dimensional quantity. In analysis, say this is outrageously trivial. But of course, this is highly nonlinear problem. Therefore, it's non-trivial. You see, it's always harder go, say, from positive dimension to negative dimension. And always not always possible. And to get a zero dimension is very difficult. So the assumption should be always zero dimension to get a zero dimension estimate. Yeah, this is whole game about analysis. Yeah, but anyway, we find that because it's not true for L1, if F in L1, it fails. Park has an example, and not true for H minus one. Dimension scaling exactly right, but not true either. But it's true in Hardy space for bubbling. That is what we proved. In particular, true for any LPP between one and two. And in order to have next zero, you have to have so-called Vitali condition satisfied, means uniform integrability. Now, that has to do with what I'm going to do next, because I'm going to use heat flow to do those things. But then you will run into another problem. And of course, there's another trick to avoid a burst. Instead of about you charging to main target to this P, like a parabola type domain. Here you will have finite time blow up, but here you will never blow up. Because there is a theorem by Wang and myself. Whenever you blow up, it has to blow up a bubble. There's no harmonic map S2 map to here. Okay, there's no harmonic S2 map to here. The topology tells you right away. Yeah? This is a two-dimensional target. But there's a harmonic map, harmonic S2 map to here, clearly. Just identity even. And so for this, you won't have blow up. Of course, being said you modify manifold, the image come to here and come to here, then at the end you find a solution. It's mapped to here, not to here. Then so you have to play more games here. Of course, you sting and ling at the first place, and you play more games with energy. And shows that the actual image will never touch the part you modify. So there's a lot of little game there, but this brief idea. The paper should have wrote up. I haven't wrote it, but I think it should be 15 pages or so at the most, yeah? But it's about the idea anyway. So this is a traveling wave solution. Now I'm not sure if you can do for Schrodinger, original Schrodinger, because actually map to entire space. So map to S2, sometimes you have bad things happen because non-linearity, but sometimes it's good also because it's compact. You can play some games. Yeah. Okay, so now let me move to next topic, the anti-ferro. Now that part of work joined with Jalal Shatar. And there are a lot of physics literature. The Papanicolaou is another Papanicolaou. Yeah? A lot of Papanicolaou in Greek, but this is another one. We are doing a lot of vortex time as well. The continuous equation I'm not going to derive for you, of course, from discrete Hamiltonian, is given by here. So let's just observe very carefully here. The first part looks like a wave map, n equals unit vector. Notice that, right? And then, this part is anisotropy. That means the direction of where your magnitude applied. And then there's a funny part here, easily wedge in dot. Yeah. This is, I say, is a Schrodinger part. Schrodinger part. And this part plays most important role in whole problem. Why is it Schrodinger part? Because you look at n dot. N dot is a vector attaching to sphere. And you cross easily exactly rotated 90 degrees. So if you think a problem S2 like a plane is exact Schrodinger. So this is like a Schrodinger. But whenever you apply magnetic field, you have this effect. So what I've observed in this problem, without magnetic field, without V2 terms, there's no vortex dynamic law because everything moves in speed of light. It's relativity, nonlinear sigma model. But when you add that, the physics say, experimentally observe, immediately see a quantum Hall effect. No matter how small the applied magnetic field is, you will immediately see a quantum Hall effect on these bubbles in certain regime. Okay? So that is what they say. And they can formally tell you why also. But then you have to prove it, why. So this is the energy, and it's clearly related to wave maps. And Michael gave three very nice talks about recent results on wave maps. So I'm not going to say very much here. So this is the equation. For you? Thank you. You want to know? Now for this equation then, from PD point of view, the second time derivative will be more important, right? But on the other hand, from what physics told us, actually the Schrodinger part, first derivative will be more important. So what are we going to do? So there are a lot of possible scalings. First one I call the Schrodinger scaling, means like a parabolic scaling. And then it comes out the first equation. And then you can scaling hyperbolic scaling. And then come up second equation. Okay? And this turns out, in this scaling, you never see any movement. Nothing will move. And only see here, you see non-trivial moves. And you can also approximate like a Ginzburg-Land approximation for the system. And Veda has a lot of theory about it. So the issue is the whole Meron's dynamic in this problem. I'm not sure my slides in order, but okay. The theorem is the same theorem. Again, it's a universality link. But you do have applied magnetic field. Use Schrodinger scaling. Use first scaling. Not hyperbolic scaling. Okay? Well, you will never see anything moves. Scaling by epsilon really means that merons are one over epsilon apart. The core size of merons is like a unit size. So again, have to be in particle plus field regime where you will see. Otherwise, all these things overlap. I mean, there is no reason to see any dynamical laws for these vortices. So it has to be asymptotically to see that. Now, W star and W, the only difference is a constant. So I forget. I probably mentioned in last lecture. Now, for this equation, of course, there's a Lagrangian, usual Lagrangian. So the map can be viewed in space-time, critical point of this Lagrangian, and you have energy. Now, again, I would like to calculate. It is somehow always nice to try to call some feelings. Yeah? And this, again, turns into certain Hamiltonian system. Now, I'm not going to show you so much because it's something you have to do, but something already formally done by a lot of physicists as well. So I don't have to work very hard for that. So there's a certain physical quantity you always have to work with, right? So linear moment in this psi, this spherical coordinate become these quantities. But then, of course, I have to write down in the original n, right? Because this spherical coordinate is a sphere, you know, these angles are multivalued functions. You always run into trouble. So, and that is why here comes out something, omega, that really call all the multivalued situation singularity. And so, this is a vorticity equation, actually. Gamma dot equals divergent, curl divergent of tensor field. And the tensor field, let me see, so this is vorticity. So that will give you a topological solid location. Okay? And the other one, you transform this way. So you can see a lot of computations there. But it's not something you cannot do. I mean, it won't be too difficult to do. So there's a conserved quantity. There are a lot of conservative quantities, but particularly the total topological vorticity conserved, and the linear momentum conserved, angular momentum, and so on. And particularly this quantity also conserved, but related to applied magnetic field. Now, you don't have to calculate. You can guess immediately the vortex dynamic, whatever calculate from these conservation laws. And so it should come out from there without even knows, right, how to do it. But you know it has to come from, again, the changing of first momentum of vorticity measure. And you do integral by parts, become this quantity. So that, and I say indeed. So that means you can prove that. Assume for prove this way. But involve a lot of weak convergence, you know, same story, a very similar story, or say, as in the Ginzburg-Landau Schrodinger case. I just wanted to tell you just a story, but no proofs in some way, of course. Yeah? And one can also do semi-classical limit. That was first time, Jack, who did that without vortices case before us? Two French, Sawyer. What's the another guy? Okay, yeah. And then we did it for Ginzburg-Landau Schrodinger with vortices case. And so this is one with magnetic bubbles as well. Same classical limit. So the equation, you see the scaling. So you look at the epsilon initial layer. So you have wave, right? You have Schrodinger effect and so on. So suppose initially converging in certain proper way, and then basically say the vortices will never move, of course, because the scaling you look at, right? Because you look at epsilon time. However, the phase function average out certified standard wave equation. Standard wave equation. And if you look at it after it's like a long time behavior, if you want to look at the original equation of phase function, it's like you look at the ergodic property of a solution to wave equation. And that is like an outrageous question, of course, right? So the phase function is very bad in the original nonlinear Schrodinger equation or something like that. But that is phase function, but however, a lot of physical quantity, like linear moment, topological vorticity, so on, behavior very nicely because they are physical. Okay? So this is basically the story of antiferrules. And I should stop here about this story. It's okay, it's very brief. Yeah? All right, now I promised to talk about dynamic vortex, dynamic for Ginsburg lambda. Finally, so I come to this. All right, so. Now, I don't think I will be capable to name everybody sort of involved, just way too many, maybe more than spikes. But the formal argument, I believe, was started with John New. Yeah? And he got famous for that. First for heat and Schrodinger, then second paper for wave. But somehow he was interested in Dirac-Maxwell system by then. But it turns out that for both heat and wave, he did it wrong. Yeah, but Schrodinger, he did it perfectly right. And for heat case, I think when I fixed that, the wave case, Barbara and I eventually proved it anyway. So whether or not, well, whoever wants to do the asymptote, it doesn't matter anyway. We proved it anyway, so right? And there's the formal asymptote by Pissman and Rubinstein. Right, and other story. Rubinstein Stenberg, I think it was, first seriously look at so-called mobilities. What this means, that means if I just, without any time scale, just ordinarily Ginsburg-Landau heat equation, and you will say, how long the time has to take it in order for one typical vortices to move an appreciable distance, so you can see it, in other words. Right? At least how long, the low bound. And forget it. Yeah? And some lot of artificial assumption, of course. But that was the first paper. And later on, there's another paper by Tang for Neumann problem, because the story is very different for Neumann problem. So he did as well. Schrodinger case I already talked about. I want to mention a recent result by Steve Gustafson. He's going to be here, yeah? And my student Sperm, Dan Sperm, 2000 something. I think they just did it. So about Chern-Simon vortices. But Chern-Simon vortices again has two types. Yeah, you are expert, of course. One type, I believe, is the U, the magnitude. Is practically everywhere one maybe was isolated zeros. This is very much like Ginsburg-Landau. They did this case, I believe. The other one is everything collapses to zero with isolated like spikes. And this problem contains both spikes and the vortices I'm talking about. So you should talk more actually about it. Huh? Oh, Maxwell Hicks equation. But it's Chern-Simon, isn't it? You didn't look at the same time, so what term you all made?
Maxwell-Hicks equation. Wave equation.
What's the magnitude? Okay. But then what's the difference? Okay, so, yeah. So the potential is slightly different, for example, yeah?
Sure.
Yeah, but I think not crucial. Right again. Anyway, you can do it. Sorry, I thought it was this one, but I suggest this one to bet the end, so I was thought of this one. Anyway, with some small magnitude, Dan did it in his thesis. With large magnetic field, ask Sophia. Okay, so I think it's you understand the derived static case hydrodynamic limit. So there's a free boundary, yeah, in one region. And what happened to the dynamic? For one, it's okay. I more interesting hydrodynamic limit. I will ask you later. It's like you have all these free boundaries. Like even you put an imperial structure, and what is the average motion of these bubbles? Yeah. That is important because I just last summer in China, I just talked to somebody from engineering, very interested in combustion theory. That is very important to have very effective combustion. Of course, all this locked technology uses combustion theory. Combustion, of course, you have pieces of coal, say for example, inject in, this big wing inject into the thing you're burning, yeah? So immediately start a chemical reaction like a burning, but each one is like a free boundary. But of course, first of all, they're all in a turbulence fluid, yeah? Because the air is mold, everything, right? And secondly, and it's a lot of them, of course, a tons of them, so what will be really happening, right? To this, it's like a 1 million free boundary problem, or more than 1 million free boundary problem, but you want to average out. But with turbulence, it's much harder to do, of course, but even in very simple, minor case, it's very hard. I think stability for Ginzburg, Landau, Schrodinger was done by Shin and Weinstein. I hope it's right, yeah? The Sofa did something as well? The guy at Rutgers. I'm not so sure about it. But Steve here, he did a very nice work. I even cannot state precisely what's your result. Ask Steve, yeah? And did a lot of work by Siegel at the formal level mostly. But I even discussed that they say that two vortices, I discussed two vortices far away and then scale down at a unit distance, then they move, traveling well. But if they're close, then they move, they will actually come together and they will produce shock waves of speed very quick. And that is speed close to the speed of light in some sense. So that is another problem, and I think he has several conjectures about that as well. So there's still a lot of interesting dynamical issues left over there. Now, Legless proofs, it's a relatively long story, and in fact, it's at the very beginning, that is the problem I started with after I saw the Bible just print out. Yeah, by BBH, and what you can do, of course, dynamic will be most interesting thing to do. So I make a list. So on bounded domain, with Dirichlet bound condition, the paper is published in CPEN 96, but I have to stick on either all plus or minus vortices. Okay, the total degree had to be equal to the degree of the boundary. With pinning effect, announcement was published, I believe it's 95 or 96, but the paper appeared in a longer paper later, 98. On entire space, with plus minus vortices, but with total degree zero, or on bounded domain with both plus or minus vortices, I think eventual paper is 97 or 98 published, yeah. But I think you guys did it in 95 or 96, I believe, finished then. Yeah? Entire space with plus minus one vortices and total non-zero degree, I think I should mention this result. Basically, not because of my result or it was Jackson, but this is the only result that about vortex dynamics, which are low at infinity non-trivial topological degree. Yeah, when we're dealing with Schrodinger equation or wave equation, we have to assume asymptotically it's a constant, degree zero. Total degree is zero, has to be. And with the heat equation, that is actually there are several nice delicate arguments in the proof we've been able to handle. But this is good because in some sense, that kind of result is nice, yeah? But for Schrodinger and wave, I think it's open still. Unified proof later in a short article, just summarize some of these results. Neumann boundary condition also in this long article in CPEN of mine, one section about Neumann boundary condition. You see, this had to be finite time dynamic because the vortex start from interior, because as you know, there's no stable solution. Vortex will go to boundary in finite time, and so on. Filament, I should talk later. Wave, Babajula and I did it with total degree equal zero, I think, the entire space. So this is more or less list. I hope I don't miss anybody. I believe no French is involved in this problem. Huh? Not yet. Not yet. I know they will come back. So I just give a slight outline of some of the thoughts. Yeah. And this is started in papers by Bob, Jula, Sona, myself, with Jack Shin, and so on. So, first couple of results already appeared in my Tennessee Notes, 1995. So, this is a sort of older story, but some of the defined estimate when you treat a wave of Schrodinger when you appear. So, first of all, the BBH was for minimizer, for Ginzburg-Lanoff functional minimizer, or at least certified equation with proper energy bound. Then you have the map converging to this type with the isolated singularity with degree one and with certain phase function. But here, this basically say which has nothing to do with the minimizing property, nor has it to do with, say, it's a certified equation. It's just a calculus property, calculus lemma, which say whenever energy at this level, then you will have this compactness already. Okay, it's a calculus proof, actually. It's calculus proof, but not necessarily simple. But I shouldn't say it's not minimizing because its energy is almost close to minimizing by a bounded amount, right? But it's not a minimizing solution. And you have all the apparently bounded. The phase function is in H1, but not necessarily harmonic. It's clear. I mean, you do not specify any equation to start with. But the anomalous energy is bound. What this means, these points are distinct, D points inside the domain, mutual distance had to be bounded from below, and bound below also from the boundary. So they stay away from boundary and stay away from each other, have a uniform distance bound. And structure theorem, that was introduced in my first very crazy paper, yeah? The essential zeros. And so you have the essential zeros with the anomalous energy bounded, and all energy concentrated on the essential zeros. Right, this is one of the results in BBH as well. Okay, so these two are very general statements. Then you can have defined estimate, for example, the grading U in LP for any P less than 2. Now, Heim believes that it should be in L2 infinity. At least certified equation, I tend to believe. Of general, I'm not sure, but L2 infinity, Lorentz space. Yeah. The grading of the length of U, the module of U, and the potential term is in L2. V2 term has no problem. V2 are still somehow relatively easy. The next one to estimate is more technical, but I didn't mention also at least one of them. It's this tensor, yeah, Uxi times Uxj. Tensor converted to this velocity and plus a Lada measure, which is bounded away from, you know, the Lada measure on puncture domains. And this velocity is not in L2, so this vector is not in L1. This matrix is not in L1. This is not L1 bound because energy blows up. But the error term is in L1, sort of like uniformly. Okay? And this is like almost energetically is conformal. And I realized actually in Sona and Brazil's paper, this is one of the last section they handle this difficulty. Also when they try to carry out the general item, I will mention later. This is one of the technical issues. And you have exactly half of total energy, evenly distributed in every direction. Because more or less like EI theta, basically. Better tells you why. The motion law for vortices is come from, first of all, you have sequence of Lada measure or family of Lada measure in time, and that first you show is converging to Lada measure. Of course, this is God given, but converging for every t. We need a little bit of work, of course, yeah? And use selection principle or something. So at least up to subsequence you first prove. And you characterize this Lagrange measure as a bunch of Dirac mass. So you have a structure. Now, if you plug in this Dirac mass here, this is exactly calculating dt dA. So this is the motion law you want to calculate. So instead of calculate dA dt or dB dt, you calculate this. And here, then equals 3-4 times integral by parts, Pogacev, everything, and plus all the convergence estimate, and come out certain term, which is exactly what you want. Yeah, dynamical law will come out. So here, the basic principle in whole proof is to use so-called the first moment of a measure. First moment of measure. Now, as I said, given a Lagrange measure, of course, from Fourier analysis, we know you take a Fourier transform of Lagrange measure, and you formally differentiate, which will give you all the moments of this measure. So in some sense, all the moments of measure will determine this measure analytically. But geometry musically, as I said, the moments of measure also determine the geometry structure, the geometry and the structure of the support of this measure. That is interesting and important. That is actually the one of the key observations in the fundamental paper by Place in Arnold's, about 100 pages, yeah? Prove this famous conjecture of Biscovich and Federal for a long, long time, yeah? Very, very hard to prove. But this is one of the starting point as well. So think about the moments of measure. It's nature, yeah? Linear momentum and angular momentum is second moment. In the various proof of stability of vorticity motion for classical Olay fluid, use second moment to control the stability. If you observe a proof, exactly second moment. That is, I learned after I did all this, and then, I look at more of the similar things. So, okay. I will end up a couple of minutes, yeah? A few minutes. I just tell you, equation you have to scale in this way. For heat equation, you have to scale in this way. So you can see, look at this equation, start with proper initial data or boundary condition or entire space, something. You see there's no hope to get any a priori estimate independent of epsilon so that you can pass to limit to get a reasonable conclusion. So the only game we can play with is a certain energy estimate. So the whole game is energy, playing with energy. Yeah, playing with energy. And the mobility, as I said, the vortices, move unit distance will take this amount of time. And in this amount of time, they will move. In slow time, they won't move. In my first paper, actually, the reason I wrote, so I told Bob a little bit, but I do not want to say here, because two people don't believe I can prove that. So I did every cases, all the possible time scales, and carried out everything there. This paper is a whole mess at the end. But everything is too much, actually, to prove this. Like myself also confused, actually, the one state. But because it's not something people believe you can really prove at the beginning. You know, it's a form of asymptotics, and I see a lot of logarithm factor involved. You say, well, it will be no way you can prove something like that. And you have no idea about the spectrums. If you prove it, the paper will be outrageously long. But the method used is totally different what one should expect, actually, in this problem. So, anyway, for wave case, the mobility is this quantity. And certain case, just move in unit time. So, when you have all these, then you find the vortex dynamic law from what I said a moment ago, the various similar derivations, a lot of technical details, yeah, and it's not trivial, yeah, and a lot of sleepless night, but that's how it goes, and come sleep, and that's all here. So, gradient flow, Newtonian flow, and Hamiltonian flow. For finite vortices. So energy concentration exactly like this. Now, I didn't state all the precise conditions and so on. Then you have to read the paper. Unless you're really interested in doing such a problem, otherwise, please don't read the papers, yeah? So, okay? So I should stop here today because the next topic, well, maybe I should start a while. Say a few words, maybe. Will be hydrodynamic limit, part 3, right? Which I promised to talk about. Then say a few words about higher dimension. Okay, I promise Joe, Professor McKenna here, to say a few words about mean curvature flow in high dimension. So I should say a few words, maybe tomorrow morning, leave to last. So what is the motivation for hydrodynamics? Yeah? Now, I look at it at the deterministic level, so it's not from statistical physics. I don't have any white noise or London effect. But later on, you can add on to it. And secondly, apparently, yeah, in this century, people climb, at least for these years, yeah, basically things are very, very attractive in applied field or applied science. One is computational biology related. The other one is a multi-scale problem in physics or in any problems. The third one is this dynamical system involved, you know, all the things, ergodic properties, chaotic behavior, invariant measures, statistical behavior, somewhat statistical dynamics, and so on. So these three supposedly to be somehow over, they sort of predictable. But of course, nobody knows because people make a prediction, not people going to work on, because the people who are going to work on, they're going to determine the future, of course, yeah? So don't take this serious. But anyway, on the other hand, these means quite serious problems. So it's multi-scale. So I'm going to give you an example here, and then I will end. For example, ideal gas. You start with finite particle motion. Of course, it just write down Newtonian law for particle motion. So you have interaction potential, and you have particle motion. And what happened as n goes to infinity? I believe formally first was discovered by Maxwell, but even though this equation afterwards called Boltzmann for obvious reason, because Boltzmann was the person who found entropy condition and the stability, so on, follows. And this is, therefore is physically very, very important, called the H law, yeah? And Boltzmann introduced so-called the particle density at the position x time t with velocity c. Okay, so at this stage, I still very classical limited myself to positive functions. And Boltzmann equation comes out, Maxwell-Boltzmann equation. Okay, so this is at a large scale in average behavior like that, so-called a kinetic model, from particle to slightly large scale. And then you take another larger scale, you integrate out the velocity direction, and you will find classical fluid, Euler equation, conservation laws. And this is how history somehow come from. Yeah? Of course, history does not come from here to here. It comes here and here. Yeah? Every way along. Usually if it is proposed to macroscopic theory before even there's a microscopic theory. So, however, derivation of this will be. So you see we're from one scale to another scale. So what I'm going to do next is the following. In a small, very size, small sample, yeah, in BCS theory, after dealing with size of 100 molecules, these are real physics, yeah, and microscopic theory, they develop. Then Ginzburg and Landau predicated something, proposed a model even before actually anything exists. This is macroscopic, about 1 micron size is macroscopic, 1 micron size, yeah. And the wonderful, remarkable thing is Gerkhoff and Al Ashbrook actually justifies this in certain limiting process from BCS to Ginzburg-Landau. That is a part of the reason people never want to give up Ginzburg-Landau. Another part of the reason because every cause of prediction. And for that reason, everybody, even though these days, a lot of experimental phenomena are not consistent with Ginzburg-Landau model supposed to predict. But nevertheless, people try to modify from Ginzburg-Landau and so on. Because it's really such a nice thing, yeah. But you see, so from 1 micron, from few more, 100 molecule to 1 micron size, now to 1 millimeter, which is supposedly you want to use, say, in real practice. So if 1 micron size, the magnetic field penetrates evenly, which is not always the case, but let's assume idealistic situation, it will contain a few vortices. But when you go to 1 millimeter square, you're clearly going to contain several million vortices. Via motion, how to do it? It's like this kind of situation. So that is the kind of limit I'm going to show you next lecture, at the beginning of next lecture. Then I say a few words about higher dimension. Thank you. I know, after all the drink, everything sounds perfect and right. Ask Sylvia. I'm sorry, but she knows the, limit for steady case, stationary, not just minimum, but stationary. I think there's really hope to do dynamic. But, it's making progress. So ask her, it's the right person to ask anyway. Yeah? You know anything about it? More characterized by other problems. Yeah, maybe. This is interface now.
You say? Yeah, that's right. In fluid mechanics, some of the problems you can see is really, you know.
Yeah, it's like an elastic bubble hole that moves and so on. I didn't study this problem. I don't know. Even magnetic bubble was frightening me off. Sophia knows, right? This is a hard thing to do, even in 2D. Yeah.
So we now know the dynamics of the magnetic walls or anything like that?
I don't know. It's unfortunate. I don't know. Anybody knows? I don't know. Because, you see, a lot of time is a toy model. The next actually I'm going to talk about toy model. Toy model, maybe somebody knows it. A real problem, with the magnetic field, it's much hard to do. If a real life problem, it's impossible, as we know always. So, okay.